Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Shane Lowry is leading this Open Championship, and we'll certainly get to that in a minute. But let's start, Rex, with those who will not be around for the weekend. It is quite a lengthy list. Rory, Bryson, Luda, Wyndham, Victor, Cam, and of course, Tiger Woods. In all, it is five of the top 10 players in the world ranking who will not be around for the weekend at Royal Troon. How are you feeling about this? Is the air let out of this Open Championship, or do you still think we're in store for something very special?
No, I think we're still in store for something special. I think this is sort of the vagaries of Lynx golf. We know, especially the conditions we've gotten the last 2 days, it's been difficult for that side of the way. They got beat up. I think when we look back at this week, you're going to say, yep, there was definitely a better side of the wave. And statistically, I think the late early guys ended up with a two-stroke, a little bit more than two-stroke advantage. I'm not making excuses for any of them. I think Rory simply played bad. Wyndham Clark played awful. As you pointed out, five of the top 10 players in the world didn't make the cut. It's a little bit surprising because you would expect more from that caliber player, but this is what you end up with you when you have links golf and you can get some funny bounces. You end up with thick rough where you can maybe get a little bit lucky or you can be absolutely dead, and the wins that they got. It's just a combination of all of those factors.
I know how much you love this stat that I trot out during the major championships. Here is the stat for the day, courtesy of our friend, the stats guru, Justin Ray. 39 of the past 44 Open champions have been at or within the top 10 after two rounds. So in other words, the winner of this Open Championship is either Shane Lowry, Daniel Brown, Justin Rose, Billy Horschel, Dean Burmester, Scottie Scheffler, Corey Connors, Jason Day, Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Cantlay. That's it. Some of those stories are better than others. Since we write for a living, since we're storytellers for a living, who is the best story that remains on that leaderboard, Rex?
I like Shane Lowry. I like the idea of winning a second Open, the emotion that he has. He has personality. I like the way he plays the game of golf. We're going to look back at what he did on the 11th hole today when he hit just an awful second shot, essentially into the gorse, out of play. Ended up making a double bogey. You think, okay, this is when things start to unravel. Shane is a guy who runs hot on the golf course. As you would expect, it's going to take a minute for him to calm down. If he does end up winning that second Clair Jug, it's going to be what he did on the 12th hole. Really, really difficult conditions, into the wind, and he grinds out a par. And I think that actually settled his nerves. So I like that from a storytelling perspective. Justin Rose, I think, would be interesting after kind of not playing very good golf for how many years you want to say now, 3-4 years, whatever number we're going to put on it. So I don't think it's a leaderboard without good stories on. It's just not the ones we expected. The ones we talked about on Wednesday's preview podcast, we talked about how Bryson DeChambeau was going to finally learn Lynx golf or not learn Lynx golf. We talked about Rory McIlroy and how he was going to either rebound from Pinehurst or not rebound from Pinehurst. We talked about Tiger Woods. Can he catch lightning in a bottle? He did not catch lightning in a bottle. All of those things were much more compelling storylines, but I think when you look at how this tournament year in and year out seems to produce really good finishes, I'm still holding out hope. And I'm not saying that, okay, I believe in stats as much as you do, but you always trot that stat out like it's one of the, you're just playing the oldies.
Trends
the
are trends for a reason.
You're playing the oldies, but the goodies, because in this particular case, you have three players that have separated themselves from the field. And I'm being quite frank here because we didn't mention his name last night on the podcast. And for those who did notice, we obviously taped last night's podcast before play was finished, because Daniel Brown, or Danny Brown, or Dan Brown, or
I call him Big D,
whatever it is, we had to do a crash course on him. I don't know a lot about Dan Brown, but it didn't seem to me that given his history in the game, playing the first major championship, coming off six consecutive missed cuts and a WD in his last seven starts, I don't have a lot of confidence that he's going to keep this up. I don't know that Shane Lowry, I have a lot of confidence there, because as I pointed out, he can run hot on the golf course and he's won this before. Look, I'm not saying he's not going to get it done. And then Justin Rose, as I just pointed out, hasn't exactly been playing his best golf. So that stat can change really quickly. That stat could change on the first hole on Saturday, because you could suddenly go from guys who are seven strokes back now to being four or five strokes back in an instant. So no, I'm not putting much stock in that stat.
the reason why I am putting all of my stock into that stat, literally take all of my 401k, transfer it into stocks, and I'm going all in on this. As you look at the forecast on Saturday, it is calling for a reduced wind. It is calling for some rain, which players at this caliber, although you and I would not, they would much prefer to be playing in a steady rain over a steady wind, which is what we have had over the first 36 holes here. You look at Sunday, it's actually supposed to be a Chamber of Commerce day. Very light winds, calm temperatures, sun shining. The scores should be quite gettable. If you are in the pursuing pack, if you're a Brooks Koepka, Colin Morikawa, John Rahm, you want the conditions to be absolutely treacherous, torturous. That is what the way you can shoot 67, 68 and move up the leaderboard and have some sort of volatility at the top of the leaderboard. That is not expected to be the case on the weekend. And so I do think this trend will continue. When you look at the leading storylines, the stories that we most want to write on Sunday, and keep in mind, this is a very selfish pursuit. You and I both want to write something that resonates, that matters, that people want to read, or a podcast that people want to listen to. Shane Lowry, it would be great to have him win a second Claret Jug. Does that necessarily move the needle? Absolutely not. Justin Rose has been a fine player throughout his career, probably teetering on the edge of Hall of Fame consideration. A second major championship probably puts him over the finish line there. Daniel Brown would be so out of left field, like straight up Todd Hamilton, Ben Curtis vibes, that like I'm almost kind of rooting for it, because I think that would just be just so ridiculous for a year that's been awfully good in the major championships with Scotty, with Xander, and then with Bryson DeChambeau. That would completely come out of nowhere. I just do not see it happening. To me, this is shaping up to be a Scotty Scheffler, another pursuit of a major championship for Scotty Scheffler. If you're Shane Lowry, that is exactly the player you do not want to see on the leaderboard, five shots behind. We'll talk about Scotty in a little bit. Your story, Rex, though, at NBCSports.com/golf on Friday night was about Tiger Woods. I hear you phoned up Colin Montgomery, got his take, see if he would double down on the retirement. Tiger Woods did shoot 156 over the first 36 holes here at Royal Troon, the worst 36-hole total of his career as a professional. He said this will be the last time we see him this season, the last time we see him overall until the Hero World Challenge in early December. He said that he made progress physically, but he just wasn't sharp enough. Said the answer is in the gym, and he just needs to get stronger. Is that actually the answer here?
No, it's not the answer. I think it's safe to say that. I don't think either one of us are going out on a huge limb pointing that out. And I was taken, and look, we have both probably written this column a couple times now. I'm going to go with a half dozen times, the idea that he's not a ceremonial golfer. I'm not ready to put that on him. But as I watched him come up the 18th fairway today, it dawned on me that the people in the grandstands, and they were full when he finished up his round, they weren't there to see great golf. They were there to see a one-time great golfer. And this has nothing to do with what he's capable of, because I'm still not willing to go out on a limb and say, nope, he's finished. He's never going to do it again. Because I do believe that if he can catch lightning in a bottle, and if it's warm and there's not hilly and his body cooperates, all of those are all really big ifs. All of those things come together that, yeah, maybe he could contend. I don't know about winning. I'm not going to go out on that limb. He's not a ceremonial golfer. He's doing all the right things, and he's thinking all the right things. He's still trying to perfect his craft, and he's still trying to make his body respond the way he needs it to if he's ever going to do this at the highest level again. But as Brandel Chamblee just pointed out on Live From, he just can't do the things physically that he once did that made him so great. All of the things about his body that once made him so great, his ability to push off his right side, his ability to clear his hips, that made him one of the game's, probably the game's greatest long iron player. He simply can't do that anymore. And it sort of dawned on me, and this was the column that I wrote, that we're getting closer and closer to the point that you and I are going to start writing the column that I watched Tiger Woods come up the final fairway at fill in the blank. And it's going to be each
stop. We've been doing that for the last couple of years.
I mean, but he's still going to play the Open. He's not going to stop playing the major championships. He's just stopped playing everything else outside the Genesis Invitational. So he's still going to play. I mean, I fully expect him to finish up his career whenever that is at the Open at St. Andrews. And he's going to play that last Masters somewhere down the road. But I was struck by, we're not coming back to Royal Troon probably until Tiger Woods is about 58 years old. It's on a decade-long window is when they rotate it in and out of here. Turnberry's not in the rotation. This will probably be the last time he ever plays an Open Championship on the West Coast of Scotland. And now we're starting to get into those significant milestones when the last time I saw Tiger play at X. And that puts him into a category that I don't know that I felt comfortable putting him in. But right now, I don't know that there is an alternative.
I took a different tact in a way to think about Tiger Woods on Friday at Troon. And it was the quote that he had, that quote, "I was hoping that I would find it somehow." Somehow. I was hoping that I would find it somehow. That is a player who came into a major championship knowing full well he absolutely did not have the game that could contend. I don't care what he says in a pre-tournament press conference saying that, yes, if I didn't think that I could win, I would still be here. I don't care what he says after his round of 79 where he says that, yep, you know, I'm getting stronger physically. I'm just not quite sharp enough. He knew deep down that he had absolutely no chance. I was hoping that I could find it somehow. So now he has Rex 5 months until we see him again in competition. It's going to be an unofficial event, the Hearable Challenge. Then he'll play the PNC Championship with his son, Charlie, assuming he does not have some sort of physical setback over the next couple of months. If you look ahead to 2025, what reasons for optimism actually exist? I thought Xander Schauffele had a great thought on it on Thursday. They were grouped together with Patrick Cantlay as well. And Xander made the point that Tiger is making it as hard on himself as he possibly can. He's playing the hardest events against the deepest fields on the most difficult setups. It's clear that this does not work. He missed the last three cuts in 2024. The one he did make at the Masters, he shot 82 in the third round. That was his worst major score of his entire career and finished DFL. So to me, what should he do in 2025? Obvious he has to play more. He just has to see if he can play more. If he breaks, he breaks. But at least he's giving himself a chance to get competitively sharp. He said the only thing he wanted to do in 2024 was play all four major championships. It's the first time in a while that he has been able to do that. He did it, but he was uncompetitive. He was a ceremonial golfer. It is not a strategy that is feasible moving forward. He has to play, even on the off chance that it leads to injury and him not playing a major championship.
You asked the rhetorical question of what did he give you to give you any hope going into next year? And I will say that physically, he seems like he has turned a corner. That, look, there are going to be limitations going forward. What he is now, that's the end product. He's not probably going to get any better. But he feels like, as you pointed out, that at least I can go out and compete four times a year. And you're right, five times a year, six times a year, seven times a year. I don't expect him to add too much to that schedule. If he gets to six or seven events, I would actually be pretty surprised, given what we have seen out of him over the last year. And I agree with you. He needs those reps. It's obvious when you look at how bad his short game was over the last 2 days. That is simply a byproduct of reps. And he knows it better than any of us, because I think deep down inside, he knows what made him special. It isn't that he showed up and we just thought he was magical because he was this special human being. It was all the reps he put in before he actually got to the major championships, all the work he put in to make sure he was 100% prepared. I will agree with you on this front. He knew deep down inside, in his heart of hearts, that he had no chance of competing in this major championship. I just don't think his body's going to allow him to play more than six or seven events. I don't think his mind is going to allow him to wrap himself around that, because he started every day strong. Like, I would watch him on the first tee the last 2 days, and he looked like a guy that was ready to go out and at least try to do something special. By the time he got to the 18th green on both days, he was spent, just like he was at the Masters, just like he was at the PGA Championship, just like he was at the US Open.
But Rex, if he's now going into the gym, and I did think I thought he looked physically so much better this year at the Open Championship as opposed to 4 months ago at the Masters. You know, he wasn't nearly as bulky. He was walking better. He said his legs are getting stronger. If he now has 5 months to commit to basically lower body strength and getting in the best possible shape that he can, I don't see any reason why he can't play more in 2025, at least in the early part of the season, to see where he is. And he just has to get out of this mindset of playing the most difficult setups. I'd love to see him play the Amex. It's 54 holes guaranteed. It's in the desert. It's dome golf. To like, see exactly what you can do. I'd love to see him in Phoenix. Like, Torrey's not going to work. Pebble's not going to work. I'd love to see him in Phoenix, a wide open golf course, warmer temperatures, like, just get tuned up for the season. That would, I think, sort of allow himself to get into the competitive flow as opposed to being thrown in the mix at Riviera, a place he's never won before, thrown in the mix at the Masters, a tournament he absolutely cannot win in this physical state. I know I joked about you calling Monty to get comments, and Monty, if you guys missed it, made the comments that he was sort of miffed at how Tiger could still put himself through this and probably should retire. I do think that that premise is ridiculous. It's Tiger's career. Only he is going to know when he's truly toast. But there has to be an end to this cycle of thinking that, oh, you know, if everything just comes together, he could pop up and win a major championship like he did at the 2019 Masters. He hasn't won an Open championship in 18 years. Like, we have to stop this. Tiger can still have value to the game. His voice matters, even perhaps now more than ever before. He's still an attraction, as you mentioned, with the crowds full, just trying to see a living legend playing his final Open at Troon. He can still provide value, but we have to stop treating him in this current state like he's worthy of consideration to win a golf tournament. Like, it's almost an insult to the best players in the world to say that the Tiger Woods, if everything comes together, can beat them. I think it's an utterly ridiculous premise at this point. How about a couple other players? Actually, we touched on Bryson, who did not pull it together on Friday and missed the cut, nearly last in the field in approach. We touched on it on Thursday. I'd love to see him pick Phil Mickelson's brain on how to play this style of golf and add to his repertoire. Roy McIlroy missed the cut by a mile. Actually did well to shoot 75 after an ugly start to his second round. He said, Rex, that this was eerily similar to what happened on Friday at Augusta, where he shot 77 in the most difficult winds of the week and was a non-factor for the rest of the weekend. Did not handle it well for 36 holes here at Royal Troon. You think that's more of a technical problem? Is that more of a mental problem? Is that more of a strategic problem? How do you sort of wrap up Rory's lost week?
No, I think it's a game problem. It's as simple as that. And look, he talked about it after his round. He's been pretty open about this. His game is not geared for the conditions that he faced the last 2 days. He said he struggled at the Masters because the winds came up. He struggled this week because the winds came up. And it's a conversation you and I had on Wednesday. The idea that suddenly he's going to somehow change his game, change that swing, which by all accounts is among the game's top two or three swings in the game as far as what it produces off the tee, for 1 week out of 51 is kind of ridiculous. He won this championship when it was relatively benign conditions. And so the idea, could you wait and hang out and wait for benign conditions? I think that's a better option than starting to tinker with something that's clearly very special 51 weeks out of the year. It just doesn't fit this 1 week. Where when he teed off this morning, it was howling. It was the worst of the week's conditions, and you saw him come apart really quickly. Like, there was just nothing he could do to control his golf ball. And I'll put Bryson in that same category. He was clearly lost. He was going to go and try to find some sort of cure with his equipment. There's no cure there. He just has to find a way to control the flight of his ball better. I had a chance to talk with Scotty Scheffler, swing coach, this afternoon about why he's been able to ascend to play Lynx golf so well in a very short period of time. He played his first Lynx golf course of his life at the 2021 Scottish Open. And since then, he's finished inside the top 25 at the Open Championship three times. He was tied for third last year at the Renaissance Club. He's figured it out because he loves that style of golf. He loves to see the ball come off in different windows depending on what the shot requires. Sometimes it requires something to be really low. Randy Smith said earlier this week that Scotty sent him a text, and it was a screenshot of one of the data screens, and it had him hitting three woods with 5 degrees of loft. Now, for those who don't know, normally three woods come off with 15 to 18 degrees of loft, but he's doing this because he knows that's exactly what he needs this week. Rory simply can't hit those shots, or if he can, he doesn't want to. Same thing for Bryson.
Yeah, I completely agree. I followed Scotty Scheffler over the last 9 or 10 holes in his second round. I was struck by the quality of the strike. As you mentioned, that's something that was a stark contrast to Rory, because when you're not comfortable working it both ways or you're avoiding a certain miss, this has not been the best season with his iron play for Roy McIlroy. This is the sort of thing that can happen. Like, keep in mind, we're talking about 30 mile an hour crosswinds here. That's essentially a 40 to 50 yard difference in sort of a situation where you have to sort of throw out the numbers of what your yardage is and just hit shots. And the quality of the strike matters, and no one's quality of the strike is as good as Scotty Scheffler's is at the moment. That is what sort of gobbled up Rory. Just a terrible week with approach play. Couple that with a bad week on the greens. And Roy McIlroy now has a week's vacation before you'll see him at the Olympics. It was certainly a surprise. I don't think anyone could have foreseen this coming. I do think we were probably seduced a little bit. I wish we had seen more wind at the Renaissance Club. Based on what that leaderboard looked like at the end of the week and how those players have fared this week, I think it's a pretty clear indication that that was not the best prep for the Open Championship, just because the conditions they're going to face. Nothing, of course, that they can do about that. Rex, what are you looking forward to seeing on Saturday? Again, Shane Lowry will take a two-shot lead into the weekend. Final group at 3:45 p.m. local time. That is 10:45 on the East. That's a lot of time to spend with your wife before the leaders go off.
I think Shane Lowry is going to be at the top of that list of things I want to see, because, again, he savors this type of golf. It is interesting to hear Rory talk about how this really isn't his brand of vodka, where he'd rather not play in these conditions, whereas Shane savors it. He plays some of his best golf. Again, it brings out that creative side. It's the side that forces you to do things that you're not normally capable of doing on the PGA Tour, because that's all kind of about point A to point B. This is a little bit more creative. It's a little bit more artistic, and it's fun to watch Shane Lowry play that brand of golf. You start inching your way down the leaderboard, and you kind of touched on a couple of the players that you want to watch: Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka, right there on the tail end. I don't think they're in that window that you seem to describe.
They're not in that window, but they are playing together.
Well, and I feel like you should march to the first tee and tell them they don't have any chance. Statistically, you guys are finished. Just go home. You have no chance in here. And so I kind of liked the leaderboard. It's a mix of some players that we probably didn't expect to be up there this week. And you're right. I think going back to last week, it wasn't the best litmus test to see who was ready for this week. Rory surprises me. Ludwig shocked me. I mean, he played so well last week, didn't get it done on Sunday, and there's some issues he's clearly dealing with on Sunday. But to come out and to just not even have a chance to make the cut, that is shocking to me.
Yeah, I'm going to rifle through a couple of things I'm looking forward to seeing. Shane Lowry through 36 holes. First in the field in approach play, second in putting. If that recipe continues, he will win not just this Open Championship, but he will do so handily, as he did back in 2019 at Royal Portrush. Daniel Brown has been sort of, I don't want to say the flukiest player through 36 holes. He's leading off the tee, but his approach play has been middling. His putting has been red hot. That does not seem like a sustainable run of form. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how he does in what is obviously his first experience under the gun like this. Justin Rose, I think, again, would be a very good story. Got through qualifying. He'd be the first qualifier to win the Open since 1999. Paul Lawrie, he would be the oldest at 43 Open champion since Roberto Di Vincenzo in the mid-60s. I found that surprising as well. Rosie shot 68 today, what was clearly the toughest side of the draw. At the time, that afternoon wave was averaging 76.1. Rosie came in with a 68. And, of course, if DJ and Brooks are buddies who can sort of feed off each other, so too can Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, two players who went in opposite directions on Friday. Cantlay carded the round of the day with a 68. Xander could not buy a putt and shot one over. Those players, however, Rex, are just six shots back. Look forward to seeing them on Saturday. I think one, if not both of them, could get hot and make a run at Shane. All right, that is going to do it for this edition Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. You guys know the drill. In the meantime, mcsports.com/golf. We have plenty of content up on the site, news, notes, and updates. We'll be back on Saturday for another mini pod. We'll be recapping the third round of the Open Championship. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll talk to you guys on Saturday night.
Much better cadence.